Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast.
Good evening and welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast. This is number 24. I am your host, David Feld, and tonight we are once again joined by Fantasy Team Advice football staff writer Jamie Jackson. Jamie does an in-season weekly ranking of all offensive positions. That seemed to be his specialty for last season, and he writes about other things as well, ranking all kinds of teams and in all kinds of situations for PPR and standard, and he can be found at fantasyteamadvice.com. Welcome back, Jamie. Are you there? I'm sorry,
hello?
Jamie. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, Jamie. Thank you. Cooking on the microphone is helpful.
Oh, yes.
I think so.
Yeah, I think
have
so.
Have you been?
I've been all right. Just, you know, reading up on football like normal. What have you been up to?
Exactly the same thing. It's it's combine week, so at least, you know, a couple days of the combine will start. So, you know, for me, hockey's not been in right now. My basketball team is, you know, one of the worst. And, you know, so really all I have to look at right now is the football, as the Yankees will probably be an average to below average team as well. So I'm not too excited there. But anyway, it's been a pretty darn slow news week for the NFL. And, you know, most of the discussions revolved around Peyton Manning as he is expected to return for 2015. I have, you know, no idea what was discussed in that sit down with John Elway and the team hierarchy in Denver, but it seemed like all hands were pretty, you know, not too thrilled about going forward with the Brock Osweiler experiment, you know, with most of the team intact as it is. I mean, they probably have a couple offensive linemen they need to re-sign and address a couple things on defense with some free agents there, but it seems like they have a decent amount of money and are ready to go. And for Peyton Manning's situation, how do you think with a, you know, with a whole new hierarchy there, with a whole new coaching staff there, where does his fantasy value stand? Is he still one of the top guys, or is he slipping a little bit?
I think he has to be slipping a little bit, considering, you know, his age is getting up there. You have to take into consideration the hamstring injury or the thigh injury nobody knew about. You have to wonder, you know, at his age, is he going to be breaking down and what's going to be happening? I do think that Kubiak is a good hire, considering that he has more of a short passing game. You know, one of the questions is Peyton's arm. And as he gets older, I mean, I think that Kubiak is going to be one of the guys that can help him, considering he runs more of a medium to short passing game. You know, he likes a tight end a lot.
I think that has a lot to do with the arm strength. You know, or lack thereof. It's moving, you know, I mean, I know Kubiak likes to feature that in his offense, and I don't know if they're going to be able to bring Julius Thomas back. You know, they're talking about Virgil Green now as the guy who's going to, you know, but I'm not sure he's that much of a pass-catching threat, as certainly can't be as good as Julius Thomas is, or he would have seen, you know, a lot more action, especially when Julius Thomas was down. But, you know, I mean, I was talking about more about the rankings, about where he sits in the hierarchy. I mean, it looks like Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, still Drew Brees a little bit, perhaps Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady seems like he's got a decent amount of football left. Russell Wilson starting to make a case. Maybe even Eli Manning could be considered a better option, a better or equal option at this point. So I'm just trying to figure out where Peyton fits in the hierarchy of fantasy quarterbacks. And are you comfortable drafting him, Jamie? And if so, where do you, you know, where and who do you hedge your bet with when you do take him?
Yeah, I definitely like him next year more than I liked him this past year. You know, I'm not sure if we can put Eli Manning in the same conversation yet. I know you've got, you know, Victor Cruz coming back and Beckham was great, but with as far as Peyton Manning. I think that, you know, he's still got the smarts. He's still got the brains. He's gonna use that system well. And they're bringing in the zone blocking scheme. Like, that's what they've been running basically since 2011. I don't think it's gonna slow down the offense. And I think as long as the offense is clicking, I think that Peyton Manning's gonna do what he does. You know, as long as he doesn't have to deal with any injury, I think we can still put him up there in the conversation with at least, you know, Drew Brees, still above his brother, little brother Eli, but. You know, I have to put Russell Wilson ahead of him now, and of course Andrew Luck.
I agree with that as well. So that, you know, if you're I mean, I'm looking at him as like an equal option to, you know, if I'm predicting next year right now, I'm not talking about, we don't know what happened in the draft. We don't know what, you know, injury situation is. We don't know what free agents they're going to lose. But I mean, right now, if I had to rank the quarterbacks, I think, you know, Peyton is going to be ranked somewhere in that, like, you know, that 6 to 12 range or 6 to 10 range or something like that. And I think like guys like Roethlisberger have overtaken. I'd rather have Roethlisberger going in for next year as my quarterback instead of Peyton Manning right now. I mean, it's just the way he finished. And I'm not certain what the knee injury, you know, what the leg injury was, the thigh, the whatever that was. But he finished the season about as bad as you could, you know, as I think he's ever done.
Yes, he did.
It just doesn't look like it's happening. Although, you know, Kubiak's got, I think the offense will function a little bit better next year just because Kubiak is so good at it. I think that has a lot to do with it. And there's no, I mean, if they say Peyton Manning's coming back and he's the guy, I don't, you know, as long as he's upright, he's playing. But, you know, he finished that season last year. His last three games were, you know, were like 3 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, and he just looked, I mean, he looked like Geno Smith without speed.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I don't know. I'm worried. If you're in like a keeper or a dynasty, you've probably already, you know, made moves to, you know, pick up a younger guy or to hedge your bet a little bit there. But it looks like, you know, it looks like a lot of people are starting to become uncomfortable with that, and he's dropping in the rankers. I'm looking, you know, if you're in a redraft situation in any kind of keeper or dynasty, or, you know, I'm thinking he's like down there somewhere in like the third, you know, like the high third to the, you know, to the middle of the fifth round somewhere. I don't, you know, it's not like a dead ringer where you just grab him and you know you're going to get, you know, 4,500 yards and 40 touchdowns. It's just not. I just don't have that feeling anymore with him, you know, irrespective of who they're able to sign. Even if they bring everybody back, I don't know if that's gonna happen for him.
I'm with you on that one. I'm with you on that one. I actually think that if I was in a dynasty league right now, I might be trying to unload him for somebody like Ryan Tannehill and a good back or a good wide receiver, just because. You know, Ryan Tannehill's got Bill Lazor coming back next season. They didn't look too horrible this season. They didn't do what I wanted them to, but they looked a lot better than a lot of people expected them to. They were giving the ball to Lamar Miller a lot, you know, at the end of the season. So Tannehill's the kind of guy I would target right now, try to get a package deal, him and somebody else, to get, you know, Manning off of my dynasty roster to somebody that still believes, hey, he's going to do great next season. Because while I do think Kubiak is great for him, I'm with you. It's a big risk there.
I think Tannehill's a smart play. I mean, you got to figure they lost Brandon Albert like halfway through the season. Their big expensive left tackle that they got from Kansas City after he was franchised in Kansas City and played, you know, amazing 2 years ago. I thought the Dolphins were, you know, at the start of the season, I was like, wow, the Dolphins look like a playoff team to me. They were cracking heads early on, and you know, that was before the injuries, you know, the injury bug got him as usual. But Tannehill looked much improved. He still has, you know, he still struggles throwing the deep ball and has, you know, a tough time finding Mike Wallace. But
right,
for those intermediate passes and his ability to roll out and the way they had gotten the running game going with Lamar Miller feeling, you know, more comfortable and looking better here in his, you know, his third year, I thought that was, if I agree with you on Tannehill, I think he's a target to be considered, you know, probably in that middle Eli Manning, Joe Flacco kind of range right there, maybe even a little better than that because of his mobility. I'm okay with
right,
that
right.
If I'm a fantasy team. So it's That goes to show you, when we're talking Ryan Tannehill, Philip Rivers, Joe Flacco, if you're talking Peyton Manning in that kind of value range, it's, you know, it's clearly coming to the end here for him. So, well, there it is. You know, fantasy owners beware. You might want to take the chance on him, and if you do, make sure you've got somebody, you know, young and a little bit stronger who you have to hedge
exactly
against a possible Peyton Manning meltdown, which is, you know, second half of the season. Man, it's a long season. He takes a lot of hits. It's
And I'm a late quarterback drafter. I'm a late quarterback drafter, so I generally stay away from the top three or four guys, unless, like, there'll be a point in the draft, of course, where if Peyton Manning goes beyond this point, I'm drafting him. But I'm making sure that I've loaded up on wide receiver and running back, and I'm also got my eyes on a great backup quarterback, you know?
Right. Somebody, yeah, exactly. Like, if you get lucky enough to get, you know, to get to, if you get to Flacco, or if you get to, you know, Eli in that 10 to 12 quarterback taken kind of range. You know, we were talking about this a little bit last time. We're trying to figure out who the top, you know, how many good quarterbacks are there. Not, you know, everybody is aware, not everybody, but the majority of fantasy players, a vast majority of them, are aware of who the, you know, elite guys are, the top three or four, maybe five guys who are in there. And then we were trying to figure out who is the next group of guys. Like, how many teams have a good quarterback after those, you know, argue it, 3 to 5 elite, quote unquote, elite top quarterbacks. You know, who are the next bunch of good guys? And once you add them all up, how many good quarterbacks are there, really?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and, I mean, and like, then on top of that, I was just going to say, on top of that, there's some fantasy players that have a hard time distinguishing a good quarterback from a good fantasy quarterback. You know, I like ugly points. I don't mind if my points come from an ugly area as long as I win my fantasy game.
Exactly. That's a good point. But see, you know, I mean, so if you're looking, wow, man, that's a very good point. Because we were talking about it from an NFL quarterback perspective, not necessarily a fantasy perspective. Even though, for the purposes of these discussions, it's only fantasy that really matters. But you know, the 12th ranked quarterback was Philip Rivers in most situations. It was like that Tannehill, Eli, Philip Rivers, Joe Flacco, Jay Cutler, Matt Stafford kind of range, that 10 to 15 range. And I think that that's basically like where it cuts off. I think that, you know, less than half the teams in the league have what I would call a quote unquote good quarterback. And they're so rare and they're so hard to find. And, you know, there are guys emerging and a couple of guys will fall back and what have you. But, you know, obviously we were just kicking that around and we're saying, well, what do you do? You know, I mean, cause you know, we'll probably get into that a little bit later with respect to the draft and, you know, the top two quarterbacks in this draft anyway, and a couple of the rookies who looked like they were coming on, you know, last year. But, you know, it's such a hard thing to do. These guys are making, you know, a good one makes $20 million or more, or less if he wants to give a team discount so we can keep his favorite receiver or a lineman to keep him upright or something. You know, so it's like where do you? You know, the jumping off point for, you know, for coaches and general managers is like, you know, if you're sitting there with, you know, with Alex Smith or Colin Kaepernick or Andy Dalton, you know, someone like that, Ryan Fitzpatrick, God forbid, or, you know, like something like that, you're going, I need a quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so and those guys aren't that bad. I mean, you know, we're talking about playoff tested guys. It's not like, you know, it's not something like these are, you know, it's not like these are lousy players. And yeah, the situation around them matters. But you know, for the discussion anyway, we're just talking about like who the good quarterbacks were, and you know, it's just more of a I guess, you know, evidence that it's the single most important thing. It's one out of it's one out of 11 guys on your offense, but it's wildly, you know, it's by far the most important. Most important position. So these guys are, you know, there's all kinds of rumors. Like, for example, there was a whole bunch of rumors about the Philadelphia Eagles talking to the Jets about drafting, about trading Nick Foles plus their pick plus something else to move up to be able to draft Marcus Mariota. That's just a rumor, you know, that I've read in a couple of different places that are unsourced and, you know, unnamed team sources kind of thing. You know, I don't usually put much credence into those kinds of, you know, sourcing issues when it comes to rumors like this and stuff. But if they're going to do that, I mean, Nick Foles wasn't horrible. I wouldn't call him good, but he's, you know, even when he got healthy, he couldn't win his job back from Mark Sanchez, and clearly Chip Kelly was uncomfortable with that. He did draft Marcus Mariota when he was, you know, when he was a college coach, and so I, you know, he recruited Marcus Mariota when he was a college coach. So I could understand, like, he has him probably overvalued a little bit, but you know, that just goes to show you. I mean, Nick Foles was a second round pick from a couple years ago, and now he's like on the outs there. So that was just the, you know, trying to give a little more balance to the. The discussion about what a good quarterback is or is not. Anyway, moving on, it looks like Dez Bryant is probably going to be franchise tagged, and there was a whole bunch of articles on it today. I didn't get to them until a little while ago, but there was, you know, on a couple of different websites, it was prominently featured, and one of the writers was an AP sports writer named Michael Marotte, who got a couple of quotes from the team. Where, you know, Stephen Jones is an executive vice president with the Cowboys, and they're making the hard case that Dez is most probably going to be franchised. It looks like that's a high probability. What do you think about Dez's fantasy value? Is he? Because I have a couple of thoughts on that, but I want to hear what you have to say. Give me, you know, you're drafting and he's available. You got the first pick in the draft. Is Dez Bryant a guy you're taking at one? And would you make a case for him there?
I think there's a case to be made for him, to be honest with you, David. It's a little crazy. I love to get the running backs early because we know how hard it is to get a running back that's very dependable, of course. But Dez Bryant is going to be something else this coming season because I can only imagine he's thinking, you know, I wish they wanted me more, you know. And if that's what's going through his head, I mean, I can only see him getting on the field and doing such crazy havoc that they're forced to give him even more money than he wants this time around. You know what I'm saying? Almost like a contract year. It basically is a contract year. And I don't know, just his abilities are crazy. I can guarantee you if there's one thing, knowing the way this guy speaks on the sideline, as highly as he thinks of himself and his abilities, he's going to spend this summer trying to make sure that catch fiasco in the playoffs never happens again. I don't think we'll ever see Dez Bryant not come up with the football in complete control because of that situation. I can only imagine how much that broke his heart. I think he's going to come out of the gates just killing everybody. I can see 3 touchdowns in week 1 just to get his money, just to say, hey, look, you should have given me the contract and not Murray. Because if he doesn't get the contract, I think that's going to be why, because it goes to Murray, you know?
I think they really want to keep him. Like, who wouldn't? You know, I mean, he's, you know, again, this is another guy I make a case for as being, you know, the best at his position in the league right now. And I think he's overtaken AJ Green and Calvin Johnson as the top receiver in the league. You know, Odell Beckham's coming, but we don't know yet. You know, the first rookie year was great, obviously playing hurt and missing 4 games, whatever. But you know, Dallas is a much more balanced offense than are the Giants. And he is the feature guy on a team that had a feature running back, you know, who was also carrying the ball a ton. And he's just such a huge percentage of the offense. It seems like he's getting, you know, better every year. If he gets his hands on it, it's getting caught. And yeah, there's the one catch everybody's looking at because it was in a big spot and whatever. But you know, that's one catch out of the, you know, out of the 100 or so he made during the season. And it's like, If I'm not cowboy averse, which you know usually I am, I have no problem taking him number one overall. A couple years ago, I was making the dynasty case for Calvin Johnson being the first player taken, and it's you know right. I think that he's overtaken that spot now. It's I don't think that the franchise tag does anything. It helps. I think it actually helps maintain his value where it is because he's back with Tony Romo again. Yeah, Tony Romo's health is an issue. There's no question, but he's back in that offense with his quarterback thrown behind that line in a league that has a couple of pretty darn weak. A division that has a couple of pretty darn weak defenses. So I'm not. I have no problem making the case for Dez Bryant there. And you know, in fact, it seems like just about it's 100% he's coming back with the Cowboys, close to it. And I rank him as you know, if not number one, you know, him and Le'Veon Bell in a dynasty or keeper situation. Andrew Luck perhaps is in the conversation as well for the number one pick if you're in a dynasty or keeper. I have no problem getting quote unquote stuck with Dez Bryant as my first pick there. I'm totally fine with that. What do you? It sounds like you have him valued as highly as I do.
Yeah, it's hard not to value him there, especially considering the changes in the offense. You know, they're more balanced now. Before, when there was a chance that half of his passes could get picked off because they were too pass heavy, it really made a difference. And like you were saying, he was a featured player in an offense that was featuring a running back. A guy touched the ball more than anybody we've seen in a long time. And considering those things, they're not going to go away from him. And Terrence Williams is not going to mature enough to take enough targets away. If anything, he'll take a little bit of attention away, and that can only help him as well, you know?
I think the Cowboys are done with Terrence Williams.
I think there's still the whole Miles Austin factor. There needs to be somebody else so that the teams can't just play over the top of Dez Bryant. I know he's better than Andre Johnson was even in Johnson's prime. And, you know, Houston had the same issue. It was just paying attention to Andre Johnson. And if you're in a PPR league, that's great. I mean, your receiver's going to catch a bunch of short intermediate passes. And with Dez Bryant's ability, he could take a few of them to the house. But you're not going to get that big play if there's not somebody else to take attention away from him. So if Terrence Williams doesn't step up, Cole Beasley needs to be used underneath more, or Jason Witten needs to take more of a blocking role on, and we need to see more of Escobar. And it's one of those things where I think that as great as it was the season for Dez Bryant, he, you know, definitely stamped his seal on, hey, I'm the best receiver in this league. I think that with somebody else on the other side to draw attention, he could do more damage. You know, they haven't been able to lean on him like Calvin Johnson was leaned on in the past, but look at what Golden Tate did. I mean, there was one or the other, one or the other, one or the other. And I think that has more to do with the style of offense that was in New Orleans. But I think that Dallas is going to need somebody else. I mean, the weak defenses aren't going to be it. If there's one thing that the teams in this division are going to want to do, is going to be improve their defenses, especially with an offense to face like the Cowboys. The way we saw Houston grab Clowney so they can, you know, rush Andrew Luck. I mean, I guess it was Clowney or Manziel, but you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. I think stopping him, getting back to Dez Bryant for a minute, just stopping him is impossible. And that's a very good analogy you make with Andre Johnson in his heyday, playing behind, you know, playing with Houston. I mean, the best other guy was like Tevin Walter. They had like Nevier Posey, Star Jean. I mean, guys, I don't even know if they're in football. Half of them are in football anymore, or if any of them are in football anymore. But you know. It wasn't until they got DeAndre Hopkins that I said, oh, finally they got another receiver to play with him. I really thought Terrence Williams was that guy in Dallas that, you know, the guy that they had to say, okay, well, you know, we can't rotate our entire attention towards Dez because they have another receiver who can, you know, who's really good. But, you know, it looked like Terrence Williams was going to get it going, but he was playing like a knucklehead. I don't think he was hurt or anything. He was just bad.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think the Cowboys tried it at the beginning of the season, too. And I think it was after the first four or five games, I started to notice that they weren't as, you know, gung-ho about let's get the kid involved. It was let's win some ball games, you know.
Oh, and Dez Bryant's numbers went down after those first couple games. You know, Dez Bryant was his you know, when Terrence Williams, he struggled the whole year. I mean, we're talking like four catches, six catches, three catches, you know, like that kind of thing. Dez Bryant had a bunch of those games because the off receiver wasn't doing the job. You know, Cole Beasley, who the heck is that? He comes out of nowhere and contributes. You know, and if my point there is that if Terrence Williams had been on his game, you know, Dez's numbers probably would have been a little bit better. He probably would have actually gotten to 100 catches instead of the 88 or 90 that he had or whatever the number was. But it was like, you know, but once Cole Beasley started to figure it out, then defense all of a sudden now had something else to worry about. That opened up more for Dez Bryant. And I'm telling you, I think the world of that guy is a talent. I think he's absolutely one of the best. And we've seen, you know, just in recent, like the last 10, 15 years, we're talking like Calvin and Andre and, you know, even, you know, Vincent Jackson has had some great years in there. And, you know, there have been so many good players, and Reggie Wayne and, Marvin Harrison, and it's just Dez is like as good or better than all those guys are in right now. I have no problem taking him. You know, if I'm quote unquote stuck with him at number one, I'm fine. I'm comfortable making that pick there. So that's enough off the Dez. I say every week, I'm not necessarily a Cowboy fan, and far from it actually. But yet I end up talking about him and DeMarco Murray as much as anybody else in the league. But and for good reason.
Yeah,
that's great. So now, we just wanted to, touch a little bit. We've got about 5 minutes left here. I want to touch a little bit on some overlooked players from 2014. Overlooked may be the wrong word, but, you know, maybe we'll describe it a little more accurately in ways that are guys who had, you know, a reasonable or a decent amount of success, or maybe they were suspended and, you know, and forgotten about in that respect. And, those guys that can be targeted, not necessarily as sleepers in 2015, but maybe bounce back, you know, maybe bounce back players, or, you know, re-sleepers as the case may be. And just give me a quick list of like 3-4 guys that you think have the ability to be, you know, expanded role, or, you know, or should be considered a little bit higher than their initial, maybe undrafted or late drafted from last year, who should be going higher this year. Just a real quick hit if you want to, you know, name the positions and talk about a couple guys.
Sure. Actually, I think one guy that snuck up on everybody last year, and I liked him, it was just the situation. And we touched on the Dolphins offense a little bit earlier, but Jarvis Landry, I think, could be huge next season. I think he could be along the lines of Randall Cobb, and whatever he doesn't make for you in touchdowns could end up coming in receptions, just because I really feel like, yeah, we've seen it all on Mike Wallace already. He's somewhat limited in his route running ability, and at the same time his quarterback is limited. He can't hit him on the long deep passes, and unless they're going to work on that all summer, I think Jarvis Landry becomes the primary passing option in this offense, unless Charles Clay steps up or Deion Sims, and I don't think that's very likely. So I think Jarvis Landry, where they're seeing him right now, I think that he could be worth, like, a lot more.
I agree with that, too. And if my guy is Devontae Adams, if Green Bay loses Randall Cobb, which it looks like is going to happen, I think the price tag on him is $9 million. And, you know, I'm not sure that the Packers are in a position to be able to afford that necessarily. They have a defense to fix as well. So I'm thinking, you know, that Devontae Adams is going to see an expanded role in a big, huge way in Green Bay. And that's, you know, but I agree with you about Jarvis Landry, man. Those LSU receivers, I mean, Odell Beckham, and, you know, not that Reuben Randall is very good, but he was highly drafted, highly touted as a quote-unquote pro-ready guy when he came out a few years ago. And, I thought Jarvis Landry was a great pick by the Dolphins. You know, I'm a Jet fan, so it's, you know, I'm a Dolphin. By definition, I'm a Dolphin. Not necessarily a hater, but, you know, I'm not a Dolphin fan by any stretch. And usually when I draft players of fantasy value, I look to trade them pretty much right away. And when I draft a Dolphin player, like if Lamar Miller's available cheap and I get him, I'll look to trade him pretty much right away just because I'm a Jet fan. But I thought Jarvis Landry coming out, I was like, immediately he was good, and he has sure hands and runs routes. And I agree with the Jarvis Landry thing. I think that's a guy that should be targeted a lot higher than he was this year. We're almost out of time, Jamie. So why don't you go ahead and tell everybody what you're working on and where they can find it and what's to look forward from you. Go ahead.
Hey, no problem. If anybody didn't know, I'm a staff writer for Fantasy Team Advice. Right now, I've actually started working on my off-season, pre-draft outlook, in a sense. Some of the stuff that we talked about today, new coaching changes and how they'll affect the offenses, players leaving and other players stepping up, stuff like that. I'm going to try to do 4 teams at a time, if not 1 at a time, and I'm looking to get the first one of those out by Thursday.
Oh, wow.
So
you're going to approach it a little bit similar to the way you approached it last year by ranking the teams fantasy value-wise?
Right, yeah. Well, that was actually – who did that one? I mean, it's not so much fantasy-wise. What I did last year right before the season was a PPR outlook. It was a run over each team and each fantasy option and the sleepers you might not know about. And it's going to be something similar to that, except first impressions on new coaching changes and free agents, you know?
Awesome. I look forward to it, Jamie. And everybody, have a great evening, and thank you for tuning in. Have a good night.
You too.